Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. Want to say hello to all the Pewter people that are filing into the chats as we return to our regularly scheduled time of 4 p.m. shows. And today's topic, we're not playing checkers, we're playing chess.
Yeah,
talking
buddy.
About Todd Bowles' chess pieces. So, obviously, this week we were at the NFL annual meetings in Orlando, and while yesterday's show we spent a lot of time playing video and breaking down everything that Bowles, Jason Light, and Joel Glazer had to say, there was another little piece of information that Todd Bowles said that we are saving for today's show, particularly spent on the defensive side of the ball. So we're going to break it all down on today's show, talk a little NFC South news as well. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is the face that runs the place at PewterReport.com, SR Scott Reynolds. Scott, how are we doing?
Doing great, Matt. Excited to be on the show today. Last night's show was great, and it's always fun to talk some Bucks football with the Pewter people out there. So a lot to talk about today. Todd Bowles had a very good press conference.
Yes.
And one of his better ones, right? For him to go 30 minutes.
Yeah. You know what I was going to say,
Scott? Gave some pretty good information.
What I was going to say, and I was talking about this with Adam last night a little bit on the show, but obviously want to get your opinion as well. So I feel like typically, and it's a little bit different because Todd speaks, you know, three, four times a week, where Jason Light, we only get him a couple times throughout the year. So Todd is usually the guy that's a little bit more vague, I would say, because he doesn't want to throw people under the bus or kind of reveal information, where Jason can be very direct and kind of be fine with giving you some direction of what they're going to do. However, this week at the owners' meetings or annual meetings, excuse me, it felt like Todd was way more direct, and this is how I feel, and this is how we're going to approach things. And Jason was the one that was a little bit more vague than he typically seems to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I just think Todd was in a good mood. He was three-time NFC South champion and a Super Bowl champion, but as a head coach, back-to-back NFC South championships and a playoff win, a much-needed playoff win. And I think a team that when you look at the Buccaneers and I asked him about momentum and you do have to start each year from the ground up, right? It's not like what you did down the stretch matters that much at the start of the season the next year. But for the experience that this very young Buccaneer team got in the playoffs, rookies, Kalijah Kansi, Yaya Diaby, second-year players, Zion McCollum, guys they're really going to be counting on, especially on defense this year, to get that playoff experience. And for guys like Tristan Wirfs and Antoine Winfield Jr., who know nothing but the postseason in Tampa. They've set a standard, right, of this is what we have to do. And so I do think that intrinsically there can be some momentum. When you look at how this team finished 6-2 down the stretch after that 4-7 start, I do think that that's why you saw the Blazers green light Jason Light's plan and Todd Bowles plan of bringing back the nucleus, the star players for this team, and then adding some more pieces to this. And speaking of pieces, one of the more interesting things Todd Bowles said was he used the term chess pieces, first talking about Jotron Shoyinka and then mentioning several other players. And I thought that was really interesting from a defensive standpoint. And today we're going to kind of break down that and talk about ways these players can be used going forward. And maybe there's an additional chess piece that Todd Bowles has to deploy this year as well.
Yeah, let's give some context to the Pewter people. We will play that video right now of Todd Bowles and his chess pieces. So Todd Bowles is the Queen's Gambit. I believe that's the show.
So the chess pieces we have right now are Winfield, Monte, Tryon, McCollum. Those four guys can do a lot of jobs. And other people can do some jobs, but those four guys in particular right now. And if you have more, you have more. But last year, those were the four guys that you can see. Monte on the edge, you can see him back deep, you can see him up front, you can see Zion at safety, nickel corner, you can see Joe playing inside backer, three technique outside backer, you can see all, you can see Wynn at nickel, backer, safety. Those guys can move around. You don't need all of them to be chess people. You just need a few, and if you have more, that's great. If you don't need to use them, that's great too. So we'll continue to monitor that as the offseason begins and we get the guys in and kind of see how that goes.
So a couple of more obvious candidates, and then I'm sure one of the names that that Todd Bowles had in that group of four are currently having Bucks fans have their eyes pop out of their heads.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're here, to break it all down and to analyze, right? So let's just go through the Todd Bowles chess pieces. Then we'll talk about maybe the fifth piece that he didn't really mention in that clip in just a minute here. But let's start with the obvious, right? Levante David. Okay. He's the top tackler in Tampa Bay. And then you've got, you know, the blitzing prowess of Levante. And I think back in the day, we saw some dynamic plays, interceptions, a pick six in his career, and him being a little bit more fast and fluid in coverage. I think now he's more steady in coverage. You saw that battle, that epic battle with Sam Laporta.
Yes.
Back in week six, right, where he went toe-to-toe with one of the game's really good young up-and-coming tight ends. I think that very quickly Laporta's name is going to be up there with Kelsey and Kittle if it's not already.
Agreed.
But Levante can still do it all. But his ability to blitz with 4.5 sacks, that was the most he's had in a couple of years. Coming off the edge, B-gap blitzes, A-gap blitzes, then the ability to drop in coverage – just makes him so versatile. He can play man. He can play zone. If you remember the Super Bowl, pretty much erased Travis Kelce in that game. Mm-hmm. Kelce did not have a good game back in 2020. And so I think that's kind of the easy gimme no-brainer. You know. And then Matt, the other guy that was the absolute star was Antoine Winfield Jr. What didn't this guy do?
Yeah.
Second in terms of tackles, I also should mention Levante David did lead the team at 17 tackles for loss. That was a number a long time coming. He really turned back the clock and played like he did in his early, you know, days with the Buccaneers. But Winfield is still just coming into his prime. 122 tackles, 6 forced fumbles, which led the entire league, much less the Buccaneers. 6 sacks, a career high. 12 pass breakups to lead the team in that category. And you saw Winfield play center field, right? He played that three deep sometimes. He would play in the box and come off the edge and blitz. He stuffed the run. He forced fumbles. He recovered 4 fumbles, which also was a team high. His 122 tackles, that was second on the team behind Levante David, ahead of Devin White. So those two guys, Matt, really just the no-brainer chess pieces that Todd Bowles can deploy in a lot of different ways. Coverage, rushing the passer, using him in the box to stuff the run. And, it all starts with those two guys. That's probably like, you know, your king and your knight right there.
Oh, for sure. And I'm glad you brought up the blitzing with Lavonte David. And because I think with Devin White previously there with the Bucks, it was always thought of, hey, he's the fast guy. He's going to blitz and he's just going to be the energy type of player. And
right.
Sure, Devin had speed and everything like that. Don't need to spend too much time on it. He's not on the Bucks anymore. But when Lavonte did blitz, it was always calculated. And he seemed to be the one that always got home.
Yeah.
Devin would blitz and get stoned by the running back.
Right.
Lavonte would at least get his hand on the QB or take the quarterback down in this situation with Jared Goff. And I also liked when Lavonte would line up out on the edge as well, when obviously Todd Bowles has a number of, I'll just say, crazy formations that he likes to do. Vita Vea is up at linebacker. And Lavonte sometimes would go out on the edge. And I think one of the biggest strengths that Todd Bowles has that he hasn't figured out with Jared Goff or the 49ers yet either, the Lions and the 49ers. But I think one advantage that Todd Bowles really has is the fact that he's confused a lot of quarterbacks throughout the years with these different looks before even deciding on who's going to blitz. And
that's
then
right.
Those blitzes come from all different areas, and cue the music for Antoine Winfield Jr. I mean, I think you said it perfectly, Scott, just, this guy does a little bit of everything. He can take the ball away. He rips the ball out of the hands of the offensive player that is holding onto it at the moment. Is he more dangerous at the line of scrimmage or back at a traditional safety spot? I don't know that answer, but I think that's a great answer not to know. Because it's a question of, hey, he's awesome in one spot. He's just as awesome in another spot. Let's use him a little bit everywhere, all over the field. So I'm excited for what Todd Bowles can dial up this year, specifically really for both guys, because the Bucks have people in place to kind of cover for these guys if they are going to blitz or if they are playing specifically at a position.
Right.
Jordan Whitehead with Antoine Winfield Jr. And if the Bucks are able to get consistent play from KJ Britt at inside linebacker next to Lavonte David, I think that opens up a couple more things for Lavonte, who at this point in his career, as he's still playing at a very high level, the best thing for Lavonte is going to be his instincts more than anything else. Because has he lost a step compared to 4 or 5 seasons ago? Yeah, a little bit. That's just natural. That's just called age. I'm learning that on a daily basis. My knee starts hurting when I wake up. I don't
for
know.
No reason.
Having situations for this defense with Todd Bowles where he can line up Lavonte and just go, Lavonte, just use your football knowledge.
Yeah.
Here, it's almost like for those that watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, they don't write all of the script out. They just give a couple of bullet points and essentially improv from there. And it's hilarious. And this last season has been great.
Right.
Kind of what Lavonte David is right now. Just give him the bullet points and he'll fill out the rest of the scene.
I love that analogy, and you're right. We saw Derek Brooks extend his career and play well into his 30s because of instincts. Same with Rondae Barber. Those smart players that know the scheme inside and out, they could teach it just as well as a position coach or a coordinator, and they have the high football IQ to anticipate. And I think that's such a huge trait that Lavonte David has. You're not going to fool this guy, right? He might not make every play. He might not make every tackle. He might not break up every pass, but he's not going to get fooled. He'll be in position. And I think that's one of his greatest values and assets. And he still has the ability. We saw that with 17 tackles for loss, 134 tackles, I believe, is what he had last year, 4.5 sacks, still can get the job done. And I just want to see him pick off another pass and also get back to forcing some more fumbles, because that's really been Lavonte David's calling card in the past as well. There's no doubt about it.
Hey, let's get to a super chat. It actually started right before the show. So thank you to Mark Fisher, a.k.a. Redfish, for the $4.99 super chat, who says, I like our offseason, but with mostly maintaining, how do we catch the 49ers/Lions, parentheses, Cowboys suck? They may suck even more if they don't sign Dak Prescott after the season. Can a second-round rookie really upgrade our line?
How do they catch the 49ers and the Lions? That's a really great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. I take it back.
And you know, I spent my Fab Five last week kind of talking about the 10 games I'm really looking forward to seeing, right? And the 49ers and Lions are right there at the top because they've gotten the better of this team through their measuring stick. They were both in the NFC Championship game last year. The Lions prevailed over the Buccaneers, but then succumbed to the 49ers, right? And the 49ers had a chance to win yet another Super Bowl against Kansas City, came up short. So I think having to play the Lions three times in the last two seasons, because they played Detroit twice last year, and then playing the 49ers three times in the last 3 years, we saw some improvement against the 49ers from when they got demolished out in San Francisco 2 years ago to last year. They put a more competitive fight. And with the Lions, you know, they just proved to be the better team, roster, you know, wise, talent wise, et cetera. And I liken last year's Buccaneer team, Matt, to the Lions team from the year prior. The difference being the Bucs actually made the playoffs and got to advance a little bit, where the Lions were 9-8 2 years ago, but came up just short of missing the playoffs. But they used that momentum as a catalyst to having a championship season in terms of winning their division and then winning a couple of playoff games, including one over Tampa Bay, and going to the NFC Championship game. So they're hopefully they can springboard out that experience and get to the NFC Championship game and win it and get on to the Super Bowl. That's what they're hoping in Detroit. And for Tampa Bay, it's kind of the same thing. It's you know, using those games as a measuring stick. It's going to be very interesting to see when that Lions game is going to be in Detroit and when that 49ers game in Tampa Bay this time is going to be. How did they catch them? Just more talent, better coaching, football, for all of the intricacies and strategy and you know, the upper level echelon of skill and play and schemes, it's pretty simple. Do you have better players, and can the coaches put those better players in better positions? And if that's the case, then you win. And that's typically what football is at the end of the day. And I think the Buccaneers have a roster to compete with both of those teams, and we'll see how many more better players Jason Light can get in this year's draft to add to that talented roster that I think is certainly in the realm of competing with and beating both teams.
I definitely think the Bucs have made strides against playing these opponents that they've played for a couple of years in a row now, or at least for the Lions, playing them twice last season. Let's remember that playoff game. The Bucs were tied going into the fourth quarter, and they lost a very close game. Remember, they had the football with, under 2 minutes left, with a chance to go and either tie or take the lead. So I think tie, because they didn't get the two-point conversion. Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't like they were that far off. I think where the larger gap is with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, if you go back to Tom Brady's last season, they just got absolutely whooped on both sides of the football, for sure. I feel like last season in that game against San Francisco, the offense actually showed up to a degree, and that's a really good 49ers defense. It was the Todd Bowles Bucks defense that really just still cannot figure out the 49ers. And granted, it's a great offense. Kittle, Debo, all of those guys. So at the NFL annual meeting the other night, I was talking with someone that I'll just say is very involved with the 49ers offense. And I asked, why do you guys how are you guys just able to take it to the Buccaneers over and over again on offense? And he kind of chuckled. And one thing that he kind of gave away was that they tried to exploit Devin White. Yeah. They really tried to exploit Devin White. So I'm not saying all the problems are just going to be fixed now that Devin White is no longer on the team. But I think having Winfield and Whitehead, have your best players play their A game against the 49ers and kind of clean up the major, major weaknesses.
Yep.
If the Bucs offense can bring it again and the defense really just doesn't play terribly, I think the Bucs can keep it close. They're not going to blow out the Lions. They're not going to blow out the 49ers. But this team is too good and too talented to not be in a close fourth quarter game with either of these teams.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of 49ers, we're going to kind of transition a little bit. We'll get to the other two guys, Jotron and Cuenca, who's another chess piece, which might surprise some of you, as well as Zion McCollum, another interesting chess piece. We'll talk about those guys in a second. But let's get to some of the news of the day. Kind of saw this move coming a little bit because I had a conversation with somebody affiliated with the Carolina Panthers, possibly head coach.
That's why we go to Allison. These things. That's why we go to these things.
Yeah, who kind of talked about the need for a pass rusher after they traded, after the Panthers traded Brian Burns to the Giants. Probably should have traded him. I mean, Dan Morgan, the new Panthers GM, and Dave Canales, the new head coach, were not in, you know, they weren't empowered to do that a couple years ago when, or I should say even before the season started, when they could have gotten more for Burns, but they were able to get a second rounder. And I think another draft pick for Burns who goes to the Giants, and they signed Jadeveon Clowney today. And I put like an interesting tweet up there, and it's got a bunch of blowback. And I just want to set some people straight here. Okay. Jadeveon Clowney, the body of work, right? There's definitely some holes in his game. There are definitely some years where he got hurt, didn't play well, was not very motivated, etc. Okay. That was not the case last year. I watched a lot of Baltimore Ravens games, and Jadeveon Clowney had a better season last year than Brian Burns did. Okay. Statistically, and even you can look at the Pro Football Focus grades. Okay. So Jadeveon Clowney last year, his Pro Football Focus grade was an 82.9. He had a 79 pass rush grade. Okay. And when you look at Brian Burns, I mean, and PFF is not the end all be all. He had a 75.2 pass rush grade and a 73.8 overall grade. And then when you look statistically speaking, Brian Burns had 8 sacks last year. Jadeveon Clowney at age, 30 had 9.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles compared to Burns' 1. He just made more plays. Was he on a better defense? Yes, he was. But it's not like the Carolina defense was a slouch. Frankie Louvu was a great linebacker. Derek Brown, I mean, line up next to that guy, he's going to make you look good as well. So I'm more concerned about Jadeveon Clowney with his size, speed, than I am against Brian Burns. Brian Burns didn't really do much against the Buccaneers. He just didn't. Okay, I know there's Florida State fans out there. They're big Brian Burns fans, et cetera. Yes, Brian Burns got a bunch of sacks. Okay, in the last 8 games, Brian Burns has 2 sacks against the Buccaneers. 2. One of those was against Donovan Smith. Okay, so I'm just saying, I didn't say that Jadeveon Clowney's a better player than Brian Burns. I'm not saying that. What the tweet said was, I think Jadeveon Clowney is going to be more of a problem for the Bucs than Brian Burns was. Okay. And I've talked to some coaches, and when they went to game plan against Brian Burns, they weren't afraid of him. They just weren't. And so is he a good player? Yes. Hassan Reddick's the same way. Hassan Reddick's good player. Hasn't done squat against the Buccaneers. 0 sacks ever against the Buccaneers. In 2 games when he was with Carolina. 2 games when he was with the Eagles last year. No sacks against the Buccaneers. Luke Getteke erased him. So, you know, I'm not taking a shot at Brian Burns and saying, oh, he's not as, you know, that the Jadeveon Clowney is better than Brian Burns is as a player. But for the Buccaneers, if Brian Burns, you know, plays as well as he did in other games against Tampa, I would say differently. But the Bucs just neutralized him and didn't allow him to really wreak havoc. With Jadeveon Clowney, if he can play as well as he did in Baltimore, he was very motivated. He's on a good team, right? If Dave Canales can, you know, shoot some rainbows at the guy, right, and make him like, you know, tell shiny, happy
couple,
people.
Yeah, a couple secrets as well. He clearly knows the Bucs offense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Exactly. So, I think that Clowney is... It can be more of a problem for the Buccaneers than Brian Burns was.
I think 2 things can be true where it's like, yes, Brian Burns is a great player, but also great players sometimes have a kryptonite. And I'm not even saying that the Bucs are necessarily the kryptonite to Brian Burns, but you laid it out, Scott. 2 sacks in the last 8 games. That's great. That's great production by the Bucs offensive line. And I think that speaks a lot more to just the anchors of Tristan Wirfs and Luke Goedeke.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget, they are – Tristan Wirfs is one of the best offensive tackles right. in the league, and Luke Goedeke is an ascending player. The Bucs have yes. two really, really – they have one great tackle and another really good offensive tackle as well on the right side. So
yeah.
I think those guys certainly deserve some credit. Now, the last eight games, obviously Goedeke only played tackle last season.
Right.
But yeah, I think the Bucs offense still deserves credit for neutralizing not just Brian Burns, but yeah. in the past, other pass rushers has as well
right.
haven't really dominated or taken over a game.
Yeah.
Clowney has had one of the most fascinating NFL careers, I think,
right.
As of late. Number one overall pick, made a huge play in Tampa when he played for South Carolina in the Outback Bowl yeah. when he knocked off the Michigan player's helmet. That yeah. was an unreal play. And, you know, maybe didn't necessarily live up to the hype of a number one overall pick, especially with the Texans. But I don't know, has had a great second slash third act of I'm going to wait through free agency until I'm the last best pass rusher available.
Yeah.
And still get a pretty damn good contract and has done pretty well over the last couple of seasons. So obviously not great news for the Buccaneers because he's a talented pass rusher, but
yeah.
a fun challenge for sure.
I think I would be more concerned about Jadeveon Clowney in Carolina than Chase Young.
Yeah.
In New Orleans for real. I don't think Chase Young's that good of a player. He had 7.5 sacks last year. Went to the 49ers. Here's the thing, Matt. We went to the 49ers. He's playing opposite Joey Bosa.
Yeah. Right?
Opposite where he's next to Eric Armstead. And you would think with all the one-on-ones he got with those formidable players up front, he would get more than 2.5 sacks. He did get one against the Buccaneers, right, when everything kind of like crumbled at the very end, right, when the Bucs yeah. were playing catch-up mode the fourth quarter. They started to tee off on Baker Mayfield. I think they sacked him 3 or 4 times in that game, a couple times in the fourth quarter, right? And that's when you want a lot of those sacks. That's right when you have a lead on a team and a running back has about 70 yards in the game, he finishes with 100. Where do those yards come? They come in the fourth quarter, right, when you're trying to salt away that win and run the ball and you wear out the defense, et cetera. So sometimes those fourth quarter sacks, that's where they add up. And that was the case with Chase Young. But I'm not – like scared of him going to New Orleans. I don't think that he's that good of a player.
I think the worst thing Chase Young did was when he tried to call out Tom Brady in 2020 when
we
the
want
Bucks
Tom,
played.
Yeah.
when
Tom.
When the Bucks when the okay. Bucks beat Washington on their way to yeah. winning the Super Bowl in Tampa.
Donovan Smith's best games ever.
Yeah.
Great game.
Great game by Donovan Smith.
Yeah.
Well, and who won another Super Bowl this year, along with Mike Edwards.
You know what? I mean, I next time I see Donovan Smith, I'm going to have to ask him. I'm like, did you have a Celsius before the game? Because you played like you had a Celsius before the game. Didn't he, Matt?
It sure seemed like it in that game. And this is a great time to remind everybody that Celsius is the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. Make sure you check out the newest line of Celsius. That is the Celsius Essentials, where they have awesome flavors like Blue Crush and Dragonberry. They got a mango one as well.
Mango Tango, right?
Yeah, Mango Tango. Yeah. Sly was having it over yeah. in Orlando. These are the tall boys. They are 270 milligrams of caffeine. So if you need a little extra oomph, a little extra punch, the Celsius Essentials are for you. If you want a regular OG flavor of Celsius, whether it's the sparkling watermelon or the strawberry lemonade or the Arctic vibe, my personal favorite, shout out Felix Schmidt. If you want to check out where to find a Celsius, just go to the Celsius store locator, punch in your address, and it'll tell you the closest location where you could pick one up. Might be a Walmart, Target, a health and fitness store, or, you know, it could be the JW Marriott Hotel where you can find your nearest bodega.
Bodega.
And once you can go into your bodega and you know you love Celsius and you want to get more? You want to just kind of get to the point and forget about getting one or two cans per trip? You want a whole case of it? That's when you buy it in bulk over on Amazon with the subscribe and save. I recommend doing the variety pack because variety is the spice of life. And there's so many awesome flavors of Celsius. Why limit yourself just to one? So, like I said, go to Amazon, click on that subscribe and save and have it sent to your place of residence whenever you want. You're in charge. You're the captain. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks. Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com.
Yeah, so we talked about a couple of pass rushers and Brian Burns and now of the Panthers and Chase Young, now of the Saints. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one of Tampa Bay's pass rushers. That's Joe Tryon-Shuinka, who was maybe a surprise pick as a chess piece.
Yeah.
Buccaneer fans might be scratching their heads over that. Well, you know, I've done some digging and I kind of have some reasons why he thinks of Joe Tryon-Shuinka as a chess piece. Primary reason is because he is not a pure edge rusher. he has struggled in that area. The Bucs drafted him to become an edge rusher. And guess what? Used a first round pick on him. Didn't pick up his fifth year option. That's pretty telling. Entering a contract year now. And Todd Bowles finally has figured out how to use Joe Tryon-Shuinka. And I put that article, did that story this morning, as well as the chess piece article that came out this afternoon. Both of those are in the chat. So encourage you to read both of those stories, plus all of our great content on PewterReport.com. Matt did a great story on Jordan Whitehead. We'll talk about Whitehead in a minute here, and I'll put that in the chat as well. But or actually, it was Bailey. Did Bailey do that story? Yeah, Bailey.
I did the cornerbacks.
Correct. Yeah,
Once, but anyway,
another good one. Bryce Hall and Tavier Thomas. Great content on PewterReport.com. Check it out. But let's talk a little JTS here. Drafted in 2021 to be a first round pick to really replace Joe Tryon, Jason Pierre-Paul. And the interesting thing is that year, if you remember, Jason Pierre-Paul gets injured, hurt his shoulder right off the bat. And they had to use Joe Tryon-Shuinka even more than they probably wanted to. And in the role that they put him in, Matt, a lot of times on third down, he was the nickel rusher because JPP had that nickel rush job where he would go inside. That was kind of the top whole specialty. But with basically JPP only having like one good wing, right? He was the outside guy, and they used JTS in the middle as that nickel rusher where he did okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's long, athletic, 6'5", 265 pounds, 4'6", 840, has some good speed, just lacked the instincts and really isn't the finisher, right? I mean, how many sacks did he miss? And that's really what scares me about Chop Robinson, by the way, at Penn State. That's why I'm not a big Chop Robinson fan. Go back and look at the tape. And it's not just the lack of sack production. It's the sacks that he should have had, but just couldn't seal the deal. Couldn't, you know, grip and hold and drag down. And so I see a little bit of JTS and Chop Robinson, but I digress. When it comes to JTS, the second season, all right, Jason Pierre-Paul's gone. We're going to make this guy the full-time edge rusher. And what happened? Four sacks again. Okay, yeah. Plateaued. So then Jason Light, who's quick to admit a mistake, drafts Joe Tryon-Shuinka's replacement, Yaya Diaby, in the third round. And then doubles down and gets Jose Ramirez in the sixth round. We'll see more of Jose Ramirez in training camp in the preseason and next year, I think. But so Todd Bowles had to find a way to get this guy to be a little bit more functional and useful and use that athleticism. So he drops him in coverage. He uses him in the slot. He used him as a stand-up A-gap blitzer at times in the middle of the defense. And the interesting thing is when you look at all of the statistics of where Joe Tryon-Shuinka lined up, well, he had five sacks last year, which was a career high, in addition to 45 tackles, a forced fumble and a fumble recovery, and a pass breakup. He played 587 snaps at outside linebacker last year, 10 inside, at defensive end slash tackle in those nickel rush packages, 17 snaps at inside linebacker on the second level of the defense, and then 11 as a slot cornerback. So when Todd Bowles talks about chess pieces, he's talking about versatility. We saw Joe Tryon-Shuinka in coverage. You might remember this play here. He's tackling Amon-Ra St. Brown at the second level, dropping him in coverage. And he's actually a pretty good coverage defender, whether it's in the flat or in the slot. He's got the range and athleticism and long arms. He's kind of hard to throw over. So I think you're going to see him more as that joker role. And that's a term that John Gruden used to use when talking about skill position players. He's a joker. You can use him in any hand, right? And kind of turns a two of a kind, you know, into a full house, or, you know, a three of a kind. So I think with JTS, you're going to see him doing some more things that maybe he hasn't even done before yet. And Todd Bowles likes to tinker in the offseason, use those OTAs, mini camps, et cetera. And Matt, I wouldn't be surprised with Devin White gone. And you mentioned it earlier. What is Devin White? What was he good at? Those A-gap blitzes. Well,
yeah.
Now you're taking a guy who's 6'5" with longer arms than the 6-foot Devin White. And at 265 pounds, he's bigger than the 240-pound Devin White. And he's not as fast, but still pretty fast. I mean, why not stand him up? Why not, if you were going to platoon Devin White and KJ Britt on third downs, yeah, why not bring in JTS as the inside linebacker in those blitzing situations and have him go up against a blocking back and bowl somebody over and use those long arms to sack more quarterbacks? I think he might be even better in the A-gap than he is as an edge rusher.
I like this idea because I think at this point with Joe Tryon Soyinka, it would just be stubborn to just keep him at outside linebacker, yeah, and have him continuously doing that role, because there are some things that he would perform quite well at. Right. I think he can get to the backfield relatively quickly, but could never finish the job. And I think that's very telling when you see that his tackling grade for Pro Football Focus, which, you know, isn't the end all be all, but his tackling grade was 48.5.
Yeah.
And, you know, can't help but think about that Falcons game where Desmond Ridder was running to the sideline, JTS was chasing him, and couldn't get the tackle in the first place. And that's why Ridder was able to go and reach the end zone. JTS, all we've said about him positively is, oh my God, he's a physical specimen. He's the Hulk. He can do all these great things. So why not use his athleticism to the Bucs' defensive advantage? I mean, overall, his best PFF grade in his three-year career of anything he's done was in 2022. He had a coverage grade of 71.4. That's the best grade he's ever had, which means he's out in space. He's doing something a little bit different. We saw the Bucs get by, and this was out of necessity, but we saw the Bucs get by for a half with Ryan Neal at inside linebacker because they had no other choices, and everyone was injured, and everyone knows the story by then. I wouldn't hate in the preseason, maybe you don't see it on like the first drive or the second drive, but then JTS comes in and he's lined up at inside linebacker, and maybe it is just to blitz the A-gap, and that's absolutely fine because JTS is athletic. He can do a lot of great things, and I think can move in certain ways better than Yaya Diaby. Who's the better outside linebacker? It's Yaya Diaby, but athletically and dropping back in space, which is something that Yaya hadn't done, and obviously JTS had to learn a little bit too. But as far as just being smooth and lateral and things of that nature, JTS is the guy. And understandably, there's a ton of frustration about his career with the Buccaneers because he's left a little bit on the table.
Right.
We all want more from Joe Tryon Soyinka because he was a first-round pick and an edge rusher. And when you draft an edge rusher in the first round, you expect him to be the guy, the premier pass rusher. And obviously, it makes sense that the Bucs didn't pick up his fifth-year deal, but that doesn't mean you just have to completely close the door on him. If you have him for one more season, why not go and try to figure out what he is and then just say, oh, well, he's a lost cause and we're just going to put him way down on the depth chart. That doesn't help out anyone. It certainly doesn't help out Joe Tryon Soyinka, but it doesn't help out the Bucs defense either. So why not just go buck wild, no pun intended, in this training camp and try to figure something else that works? Because we've seen it with the guy that we're going to talk about next with Zion McCollum. Hey, why don't we move him to safety, see if he can help out? Bam, 32-9, they beat the Eagles. So this is the Todd Bowles specialty. I know, obviously, corner and safety is kind of his wheelhouse of doing different things, but screw it. Have a field day with JTS in different spots.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm not suggesting he become an inside linebacker, but why not deploy him more than just 17 snaps, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you use Devin White in that role as someone who can – you know, show blitz and come or show blitz and drop. I mean, JTS can do that. And if KJ Britt can't handle some of the coverage duties, then continue that platoon and use KJ Britt, you know, for 80% of the snaps at inside linebacker, but then maybe mix in some JTS, get some more speed in the field, some ability to, you know, to use that frame and that speed. And guess what? He's had plenty of experience as an interior rusher. So just stand him up rather than have him down in a three-point stance. Run some stunts and games with him inside. And I think you can salvage something. And maybe get more than five sacks. Maybe get some of those sacks. Remember, Devin White had 9.5 sacks. Or actually, I think he had 9 sacks in 2020.
Yeah.
And probably would have finished that year as the team's leading sacker, but missed some time with COVID at the end of the year. So I'm with you, Ben. I think that use that time to tinker with JTS in the offseason, and maybe you get something out of him. Folks, the reason why we call Todd Bowles the chess master when it comes to this particular story or whatever is, you know, he had some really good games down the stretch. I mean, you look at not just that Eagles game, but back up a little bit, really holding a pretty explosive Packers offense to just 20 points up there in Green Bay in a 34-20 win. That was really kind of the sign of things to come, kind of, you know, erased a little bit of that bad taste where he and every single Bucs defender had just an absolute crap day at the job.
Yeah.
In Houston against the Texans, right? That was obviously the worst game of the year for the Bucs defense. But down the stretch, that game against the Packers up in Green Bay on Christmas Eve against the Jaguars, right? Really kind of putting the nail in the coffin, right? That was a huge win there. Was it 34-12, something like that?
Yeah, it was very, very in favor of the Bucs.
Yeah, when they needed to win at Carolina and the offense was doing absolutely nothing, 9-0 shutout. And then again, the Eagles game 32-9, which that game we hailed as a masterpiece. It was on par with what the Bucs did to the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 20, or I should say Super Bowl 55 in 2020. And that brings us to this guy right here, Zion McCollum, one of Todd Bowles' absolute favorites. And it was that Eagles game where we really saw him play Zion McCollum at safety and in the slot. We saw less Christian Isian. We saw less Ryan Neal. And it was the ability for McCollum to use his speed to match up with some of the speed that the Eagles had. Remember, Donte Smith had a huge catch down the middle of the field, but it was McCollum who made the touchdown-saving tackle in that game. So I like the outside-the-box thinking, and I think now you're going to see McCollum play mostly outside corner unless Bryce Hall shows up and really gives some run for his money. Then McCollum might be more of that swing player that he can play inside at cornerback, in the slot at nickel, maybe some safety as we saw him play against the Eagles, and even some against the Lions the next week, or he can play outside corner. But I think that this is a player that Todd Bowles really likes, who's really coming into his own, proved to be a better tackler last year, Matt, as well as better in coverage. I think the next thing this guy's got to work on is the dreaded ball skills, which helped get Carlton Davis on his way out of Tampa. And if Jamel Dean doesn't stay healthy and start picking off passes and creating some more takeaways, he's going to be the next one.
I still think about what Todd Bowles said at the end of the year when he said, I love Zion at corner, but I like him at safety as well. And I'm just curious, because going to training camp, I think it'll be a good competition. Jamel Dean, cornerback one. But then figuring out cornerback two, obviously Zion, I think, should get the first shot. But if Bryce Hall comes in and, who knows, surprises a lot of people or kind of regains his form when he was a starter earlier in his career, they're not just handing the starting job to Zion McCollum, especially if he's still on a rookie contract and there's no incentive like, hey, we're paying him this much money. He's got to start.
Right.
That's not the case in this situation. So it really is may the best man win. I am curious, though, in a hypothetical world where, let's just say they're both doing so well that Todd Bowles wants both of them to see the field, which, let's face it, was kind of an issue last season because Zion played so well. When Carlton and Jamel were finally both healthy, Todd didn't want to just be like, well, we're just not going to use Zion at all. What if in a situation like that again, they just say, all right, Bryce, we're going to play you at corner because you're a little more accustomed to that. Right. And they move Zion at safety. I'm just curious how that would work with, like, what do they do with Winfield and Jordan Whitehead, at the same time together. But, yeah, I'm so excited for Zion McCollum this year. This is – every season's a big season. But this one in particular, Zion is one of those guys that can really take his game to the next level as an established starter – as a premier player on this defense if he can take the ball away. Because, I mean, if he gets three interceptions on the year, it's like, wow, he's way more of a ball hawk than Jamel Dean is. And then, bam, a season later, Zion McCollum is your CB1. Or, right. You know, a much more trusted CB2 than really anyone else on the list. So,
yeah,
I think it makes for a fun competition. It also makes for a great competition at nickel with Tavier Thomas and Christian Isian, but we can kind of talk about that another time. Right. I'm very high on Zion McCollum for this year. And just the competition with Bryce Hall.
I think because they got Bryce Hall, they still have Jamel Dean, who's centering that second year of his big contract. Big year for Jamel coming up. JB asked if Cooper DeJean or Nate Wiggins is there at 26. Could you see us drafting him? That, of course, is the cornerback slash safety from Iowa and then the Clemson cornerback. I wouldn't rule it out, but here's the problem. With your first-round pick, they have to see the field to really make that pick valuable and worthwhile. And it would have to be a situation where there's no good offensive linemen left that are worthy of taking at that spot. And what I mean by that is like Graham Barton's gone, Jackson Powers Johnson's gone, maybe Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia, if he's gone, or anybody they would want to draft and move inside to fill that left guard spot or maybe compete at center. If those guys are gone, and all of the edge rushers, Jared Verse, Liatu Latu, right? If Chop Robinson, I'm going to throw him in the mix. If those guys are gone and you can't trade down, if you have to stick and pick, then maybe yes. But the problem is if you really like Zion McCollum and you really like Jamel Dean and you also really like Bryce Hall, where's Wiggins going to see the field as a rookie, right? Yeah. Where is DeJean going to see the field as a rookie? So with an edge rusher or an interior offensive lineman or even a wide receiver, Matt, wide receiver, you can get that guy in the field and justify picking that player with the first round pick. And I just don't know if this year, if they hadn't signed Bryce Hall, I'd say yes, because that's an easy fit. But now you could be drafting cornerback four for this year and maybe cornerback two next year, right? If Hall's gone, if Gerald Dean's gone and the cornerback that you picked is good, maybe it's Ian Zion McCollum starting in 2025. But that's the only problem I have. I wouldn't rule out drafting a cornerback that high, because it very well could be you're drafting the guy to groom to start opposite Zion next year if Dean's gone. But I think more likely interior offensive line, wide receiver, edge rusher for round one.
And this makes for a great segue and super chat from Nick. Thank you, Nick, for the $4.99 super chat, who says, in the first round, edge rusher, center, guard, wide receiver, everyone you want is there. What position do you go with?
Well, when you say everyone is there, I mean, you're going to give me Dallas Turner, you know? I mean,
right, like it's Marvin Harrison.
Right, yeah. Available. I think of the usual suspects, the ones that you've seen in the mock drafts, right? And I just don't think Jared Verse is going to be there. I don't think he's going to be at 26. Maybe he will. I don't think Liatu Latu is going to be there. Maybe he will. Maybe.
But let's say for this that they are, because that's kind of the exercise. Let's just say like Jared Verse and Latu are there. Okay. But Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton are also there.
Okay.
And then whoever you think is the most reasonable wide receiver that is available.
Okay. You know me. I'm a defensive guy.
Yes.
I love a good pass rush. I do. And so the temptation is there for Latu. I think that he can be a really special player. So smooth. Great moves, aggressive, plays the run, the pass. He does it all. Latu might be the guy, but Matt, I've kind of gotten to know from talking to them at the Senior Bowl and the Combine and looking at their tape and also talking to respected people like Brandon Thorne, who's friend of the program, Trench Warfare, the expert when it comes to offensive line, in my opinion. And I've also talked to some NFL sources. I'll just say that Graham Barton might be Ali Marpet 2.0. Jackson Powers Johnson seems like Ryan Jensen 2.0. You just paid Baker Mayfield $33 million a year. You want to run the ball better. As much as I would love to have Latu, I look at Marquise Watts and I'm like, okay, like I can see some potential there. Joe Tryon-Shuyinka in a contract year might be better than Joe Tryon-Shuyinka as a rookie, second year or third year player. Anthony Nelson in a contract year. I'm not saying you're done at edge rusher if you don't get one in the first round. Marshawn Nealon in the second round, anyone? Sure, why not? Sign me up. Mohamed Kamara out of Colorado State in round three or four? Okay, yeah, I'm in. But I think out of everybody there, Jackson Powers Johnson, I think might be the guy because you can play him at guard, but man, he is Ryan Jensen 2.0. I would say him or Graham Barton and then Leatu Latu in that order. Then maybe Jared Verse and then Keon Coleman. I would say those are my five kind of in order if you give me everybody. What do you say, Matt? Who are you?
No, I respect it. For me, it's like if Jared Verse is there, you're taking Jared Verse. It's kind of like my cousin Vinny. He's like, now Mrs. Riley and only Mrs. Riley. How many fingers am I holding up now? In this case, in Jared Verse and only Jared Verse at edge rusher, I would take him first. Yeah. Then I would go with Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton. Then I would probably pick Keon Coleman, followed by Leatu Latu. Yeah. But I think the tough thing for edge rusher, and you know, a lot of people love Verse and Leatu, if they are available, I feel like taking an edge rusher and solidifying those two sides with Yaya and then whoever this draft pick is.
Right.
Even though Jackson Powers Johnson is an absolute stud and very close to a sure thing, and same with Graham Barton.
Yeah.
Locking down outside linebacker for the long term seems like a better move when you can kind of like figure out center the next season, either through the draft or who's available in free agency. And same with guard as well. We talk about edge rusher as the premier position in the NFL after like quarterback and tackle and wide receiver. So I think if you get
Todd Bowles would co-sign like that, your statement too, Matt.
Yes.
He would.
So that's how I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, you can't go wrong with any of those guys, upgrade the Buccaneers. They just, you know, to me, if all five of those guys were there, Jason Light's trading down a couple spots.
Yeah.
Just saying, you know what, give me an extra pick and I'm going to be happy with any of these guys because they're good. Speaking of edge rushers, we mentioned, and we'll get to the fifth chess piece in a minute here, but we did mention the fact that Marshawn Nealon he's got a top 30 visit coming up with the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. If you have not checked out our top 30 tracker, we've updated it today, and we'll let you know who that player is. I saw a lot of comments about Malachi Corley, one of my absolute favorite draft crushes this year. I've loved this guy for the last 3 years. Western Kentucky, fun offense to watch. They just light it up. Corley to me he's Debo Samuel. He's Anquan Boldin for you old timers like me. Watch football a long time ago. Anquan Boldin. I mean, he's this guy. He is, we met him at the Senior Bowl, 215 pounds. He's rocked up. He looks like a running back, but he's got speed and moves like a wide receiver, got good hands. So he is interviewed with the Buccaneers, as well as one of the latest guys, and we just updated the tracker with this guy's information. Trevin Wallace, who was a day three linebacker, I want to say in our first mock draft, Matt, and we were a little surprised that he did not interview with the Bucs at the combine. At least he said that he didn't interview with Tampa Bay, either formally or informally. Maybe they got to him later in the week. But he's coming in for a top 30 visit, and it makes sense because Liam Cohen was offensive coordinator there. It also makes sense because he is the most athletic linebacker in this draft. Are the instincts there? He could be honed a little bit, but he's a playmaking machine. He can cover, he can sack the quarterback, rush the passer, he can tackle. Very productive player at Kentucky. Very good special teams player. So I wouldn't be surprised if they – and the other guy that they're having him for a top 30 visit at linebacker is the other uber athletic guy, Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M. So keep an eye on PeterReport.com. Check back often. Look at our tracker. I put the link in the comments.
Yeah, more and more names are getting added as we get closer to the draft, which obviously – we're all very excited for. And speaking of the NFL draft, on tomorrow's show, Adam Slavon and I will be doing a live Bucks mock draft.
With your guy.
Using machine over at Pro Football Focus. We'll go seven rounds, make every single pick for the Bucs. Maybe wheel and deal, have a trade or two. But, of course, we will keep it as interactive with the chat. If we're torn between two players, we'll have the chat vote on it. We did it a couple times last year, a couple times the year before, and it's been so much fun every single time. So we're going to do it again this year, as Christopher says, trade up and get verse. Yeah. Hey, maybe, depending on what type of deal we can find and how much it would really cost. But yeah, for sure, it's going to be a lot of fun on tomorrow's show at 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yep. Good question here from AKS12. What are the odds we get Xavier Leggett or Malachi Corley there in round two? I would be fine with either one of those guys. I think Xavier Leggett is he's an X receiver, that split end type that you look at and you say, okay, he might be the next Mike Evans, right? In terms, not as big as Mike. He's 6'1 and some change, about 220 pounds though. He's a big guy, fast, really fast, good hands. Really clicked with Spencer Rattler last year in South Carolina. Didn't have a great showing at the Senior Bowl, but we'll give him a pass. He had a pretty good season. Malachi Corley, he's more of that Chris Godwin slot guy. Yep. So either one of those guys could be an eventual replacement for some 1,000-yard Buccaneer receivers. But let's talk about our fifth and final possible chess piece, because I asked Todd Bowles about Jordan Whitehead. I said, what about Whitehead? Because this is a player that now, you know, that he's back, he's a more complete player after playing some center field, after playing some cover two, after playing some quarters coverage with the Jets, that now he's better on third downs, and could you use him in coverage and get Winfield closer to line of scrimmage to do some blitzes? Or Jordan Whitehead's a pretty good blitzer himself. And he did say that he's looking forward to seeing what Jordan Whitehead had to offer in the offseason. And Matt, again, we talked about it. That's where the tinkering begins with Todd Bowles.
Yes.
When it doesn't count, you get him on the grass, you move those chess pieces around the board in OTAs and see what you can do. You get the eye in the sky, you get the camera on it, you go back and watch the film and say, yeah, I put Jordan in these particular roles, and we have another Antoine Winfield-esque type player in Jordan Whitehead, or maybe not. But Todd Bowles didn't rule out, and he actually, I think his exact words were, if I can pull up the article here.
Well, Whitehead has always, if you ask Jordan Whitehead, he believed he was always good yes. in coverage. But obviously the big thing for Whitehead when he went to the Jets was the fact that they never blitzed. So
yes,
he could just drop back in coverage yep. based on that style of defense. So hopefully he'll bring some of that to Tampa Bay.
When I asked Todd Bowles in Orlando yesterday, I said, do you have a fifth chess piece in Jordan Whitehead? And he said, there is a very good chance. We'll continue to monitor that as the NFL offseason begins, and we'll get these guys in and see how that goes. He can do those things. It's just a matter of who is on the field at the same time that can be those types of players. So, yeah, another chess piece, I think, coming for Todd Bowles with Jordan Whitehead.
And another super chat. Thank you to Realtor David Zussman for this $4.99 super chat, who says, I'm really big on Jermaine Burton, the tight end of Alabama. Is he expected to be picked? Oh, sorry, wide receiver. Yeah, yeah. Is he expected to be picked on second round or third round?
You know, it kind of depends. He's a deep threat. He's got speed to burn, and he is he's a good player. I like him. Didn't interview with the Buccaneers at the combine, from what we understood. We'll see. There's a lot of good receivers in this year's draft class. He's not the biggest receiver, but he does have some speed. I just like a couple other guys like Corley, Keon Coleman. Those are two receivers that the Buccaneers have coming in for top 30 visits. I think both of those guys would look damn good in red and pewter. You know who else would look good in red and pewter? This guy right here, Eric Grossgroup. He's a big guy. Used to play offensive line in college, but like most offensive linemen, when you hang up the cleats, trim down a little bit, you know. But Eric back in the day played some offensive tackle, believe it or not. But now he can help you tackle your real estate problems. Whether you're looking to buy a home or sell your home, he's going to give you the most bang for your buck when it comes to finding you the right home. And sometimes the right house isn't the right home unless it's in the right neighborhood. And Eric Gross knows this area like the back of his hand. He was a Tampa native. His father was stationed at MacDill Air Force Base. So whether it's in Tampa or across the state or even outside of the state of Florida, Eric can help you either buy a house or sell your home. All you have to do is real simple. Go to housesinfla.com. That's www.housesinfla.com. Check out their inventory. Check out their open house listings. And you can give Eric a call at 513-907-4271. That's 513-907-4271. Eric Gross and the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of Pewter Report.
And just a reminder for everybody, tomorrow's show, we are doing a live Bucks mock draft. 7 rounds, maybe a trade, maybe not. We'll see. We'll leave a lot of it up to the Pewter people as well for who you want to see the Bucks get in this mock draft with myself and Adam Slavon. So in the meantime, if you're not already doing so, please follow us on our social media on X, Facebook, and Instagram at Pewter Report. And our YouTube channel is Pewter Report TV. Please like and subscribe. Leave a comment as well. Help grow our following on Pewter Report TV. We've got a lot of great content, including the podcast, but we have various other videos as well. We'll have some from the annual meeting that we were at up on our YouTube channel too. So a lot of great stuff over there.
And we eclipsed, I believe 13,500. So now we're less than 500 away from getting to 14,000. We want to hit that number by the draft. So we got about a month to do it, Pewter people. I know you can help us out. Make sure if you have it, hit the button, click the subscribe button. Also hit notifications too. Whenever we go live, you will have an opportunity to get a notification. You can check out Pewter Report TV on our YouTube channel.
Yep. So that'll do it for us. For Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks everybody for watching. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast. Out.
Out.